This is Ozarks at Large. Not too long ago, writer Peter Heller was in his mid-40s and had just finished an intense, dangerous assignment in Tibet. Actually, he had just finished the book about that assignment. He was at his Colorado home, wondering what was next. A phone call led to Peter spending a week with a longtime friend, learning to surf. Then the week was over. But Peter Heller's attraction with surfing turned into something of an obsession. Later, he and his girlfriend Kim took off for an extended trip as he learned more about surfing, and surfing let him learn more about himself. Peter Heller describes the adventures in his new book, Kook. Peter Heller, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Glad to be here.
The title of the book refers to a new surfer, but kook is not a term like rookie or newbie. It carries with it a certain amount of disdain when it's used by experienced surfers, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's usually preceded by a bunch of epithets, which you can't say on the radio, or maybe you can now with a court ruling. But first time I heard it, I went to spend a week with my buddy out in Huntington Beach. He'd been transferred there. He was having a rough year as a lawyer, wondered if I wanted to learn to surf with him. We grabbed a couple of boards, trotted out into the waves at the Huntington Beach Pier, and that's sort of like, I mean, that'd be like a beginner golfer just, sauntering out onto Augusta and, you know, wanting to thwack some balls around. It's just not done. And the first surfer I encountered, you know, clearly an expert, nearly collided with me and came up spluttering and said, "You bleeping kook, get the bleep out of the water. I'm going to bleep you up." And, you know, it was in no uncertain terms. So that's the first time I heard it. And it kind of perfectly describes an entire attitude of, like, ignoring the finely tuned protocols of surf and rebel yelling when you do manage to stand up for a second and, paddling up to other surfers, talking like it's a cocktail party. That was me.
You know, as I was reading, and this is in the very first part of the book, as I was reading that and you have paddled out and you see these other surfers and you start to go over there, as I was reading that, I was thinking to myself, and I've grown up in the middle of the country my whole life. I'm as far away from surfing as you can get. But I remember reading that thinking, well, he's not following protocol. I mean, did that not occur to you at that time?
It didn't, see, because I didn't know how waves broke. I mean, I was a river person my whole life, and ocean waves. I didn't really understand that a wave breaks at a peak. A good surfing wave you get this wall of water coming in, and if it's a good wave, it has sort of a level top. And then it starts to crumble and break at one point, and then rip that white sort of rips in a lateral line down the wall. And so a surfer basically is moving forward, but is also moving laterally, moving sideways on the wave. So I thought, being 100 yards down the beach from these surfers, that I was out of their way. But come to find out, they were riding the wave right into my lap, and they didn't appreciate it.
The popular depiction of surfer culture is part Beach Boys, part Annette Funicello, and I guess a little bit of Spicoli, the Sean Penn character from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Mm-hmm. Are any of those depictions in any way legitimate?
I think it's interesting, this whole myth about surfing. I mean, I showed up, first of all, I just have to say that we got just swamped and hammered and probably stood up for, 2 seconds combined that first morning, and I was completely hooked. So there's something, like, totally intoxicating about just being in the waves, and if you do stand up for a second, you're done. I mean, you just want to surf again. And I had shown up with this sort of idea of the aloha spirit, this sort of relaxed, laid-back surfer dude, generous. And, it's not like that. It's not like those movies, surfers are competitive, they're territorial, and they're predatory. I mean, they're hunting their wave, and you don't want to get in their way. I think that the part that is like the movies is that the people that surf really, they really live for that. I mean, even the guys, the corporate guys who work at Boeing and, Lockheed Martin and stuff, they, they really lived for that hour in the morning before work.
You write that yoga is like maybe surfing, or dance is like surfing, that it connects us to our animal bodies. Without such things, we're just walking heads.
Might have been overstated. What I was getting at is that, I remember that passage. I compare, someone walking down a sort of a city street with their Starbucks and their head craned into their cell phone, wading across the street, kind of lifting their knees to climb the curb, not the most graceful species. I compared that to a single minnow just idling in the water, you know, and how she's at home as an element, and, you know, Mercury couldn't teach her anything about darting around. And I think in some ways the way we live today, you know, in front of our screens half the time, we do lose touch with our bodies. And I love the idea of trying at least to move with an intention of power and rhythm and grace. And if you see a good surfer, that's what you see. You see somebody who's almost not like a human anymore, like some sort of amphibious, you know, marine animal. And that's what I was getting at. But, of course, when you start surfing, you might as well forget about rhythm and grace.
you wrote that you were something of a commitment phobe, or at least that the work you most enjoyed, writing about something in Tibet or going on a ship to Antarctica to learn about deep sea whaling, these were things that kept you away from home. To me, it seems counterintuitive that, of all things, surfing would lead you back to commitment. I mean, again, I guess it goes to the popular perception of surfing kind of being this loner sort of activity.
Yeah, I mean, it's counterintuitive to me. It was such a surprise. I mean, I thought, well, I was dating this gal that I really, really liked a lot. And I thought, well, okay, all I want to do is surf now. Maybe I could do this. I had this idea. Could you drop everything, you know, in the middle of your life? I was 47. Pick up a surfboard and go from kook to riding a big, fast wave like you see in the movies in 6 months, you know. And I love those kind of challenges. I set those for myself because it's fun. You know, I like the drinking out of the fire hose, steep learning curve approach. And I thought, well, I could do that. And at the same time, I could invite Kim to come with me and, you know, really, you know, get to know her. And maybe, you know, that would work out. And I came to find out that first of all, surfing is a lifelong path, and it's not something that you just, you know, you don't become a shredder in 6 months. What you do is become really humbled, and you do, if you pay attention, get some real communion with the sea, which was, you know, to me, very, very meaningful. And, you know, and I did, you know, actually get strong and learn to ride some waves. But this idea of bringing the girlfriend, I didn't know what was in store for me. What happened was, you know, the whole trip turned into rather a love story, and I learned about patience and acceptance, and a lot of that, you know, was drummed into me every day by the sea.
The name of the book is Kook. It's by Peter Heller. You can find out more about Kook and his other books at his website, peterheller.net. Peter Heller, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot for having me.